In this session, you're going to learn how to become a dream catcher. In catching and recalling your dreams, as the Kashinawa, that shamanic people of Peru, tell us, you are becoming a truly powerful person. So you're going to learn how to catch more from your night adventures and how to begin to work with it, above all, how to use a dream journal. And we'll be laying down the foundation for deeper adventures and inner work, in the course of which you will learn to embark upon conscious dream journeys at times of your choosing, and journey to sources of healing, insight, and creativity for the benefit of yourself and others. To open the gates for this procedure, we need to begin by creating a special space, a sacred space within which you can operate. You need to begin by drawing a boundary between this kind of work and the rest of your life with all its bustle and ordinary preoccupations. You need also to learn to raise your energy to the levels required to enjoy and to integrate the adventures and deeper consciousness on which you will soon be embarking. So I'd like to offer you, by way of opening your path into deeper adventures in conscious dreaming, some simple exercises that will help you to begin visualization and help you to raise your energy at the same time, and also help you to call in light energy to protect, to strengthen, and to heal yourself whenever you feel that is appropriate. With all inner work, as a matter of fact, the basic requirements are quite simple, but if omitted, make things very difficult. Basic requirements for inner work include the ability to focus on your intention. You must want to do it. You must make the tools, the space, the time, the clarity available. Intention is primary. You need to learn to be able to relax yourself. Easier said than done. Often, when we're in hurried, scheduled lives, relaxation, for which breath work is particularly helpful, is the second key preparation and requirement for inner work. Being present. Being here now, the ability to put on one side any negative thoughts and feelings, any guilt about the past, any anxiety about the future, anything that is holding you back, blocking you, any source of resistance, the ability to put that aside, be here now, in the now time, all your past and all your future is accessible to you and can even be changed right now. So you need to be present, be here now. Be here in this spacious, capacious moment of now time. And finally, as preparation for inner work, you need to be open to the unexpected. If you think you know what you're going to get, if you think you know what's going to happen, if you think it's going to follow a straightforward program and that's that, you will be blocking yourself. You need to be open to experiences that may go beyond your previous conceptions of the possible, let alone your conceptions of what might be expected. So you need to be prepared to be surprised. To help you to meet these requirements, to help you be ready for the limitless adventure on which you are embarking, let me ask you to begin by getting in a relaxed position in a comfortable and private place of your own, closing off the telephone, protecting yourself from interruption, making sure that no one will intrude on your private space, getting yourself comfortably relaxed, sitting rather than lying down for this one, and closing your eyes, and spending a good moment simply following the flow of your breath. It would be good for you to take fairly deep breaths. Don't be shy about letting your belly hang out. Draw the breath deep down into your body. Hold it for a moment. Let it flow out. Send the breath out from the depths of your body. Wait for a moment and let the breath flow back in naturally, drawing it deep down into your being. And spend a gentle moment just paying attention to the cycle of your breath. As you breathe out, you might release any sound, any tone that rises from your body, and you might notice what part of your body the sound or the tone rises from. You might see where you are centered in your body right now. And as you continue to follow the flow of your breathing, I'd like you to start scanning your body, scanning your thoughts and your feelings also, and noticing whether you feel any pain, any weakness, any stress, anything that might be holding you back or blocking you or bothering you that you don't need to deal with now. It might be something that you're going to have to come back to, but you don't want it in your way, preventing you from having a fresh and empowering experience. So find your sources of stress, resistance, anxiety, pain, rage, grief. You know what they are. And make it your intention to cast out of yourself and out of your space altogether any of the negative thoughts and feelings that might be holding you back. If these are things you're going to have to address in your life later on, you might visualize yourself placing these negative thoughts and feelings in a closet, on a shelf, in a box, in a well in the earth, places where you can come and deal with them later. If it's something you are simply ready to release right now, then see yourself, feel yourself, placing any of these images or sources of negative thoughts and feelings into a fire, and see these negative thoughts and feelings purged and carried away by the clean flame and the twist of the smoke of the fire. I think you're now ready to begin claiming your deeper energy and laying the foundation for a deeper encounter with a greater reality. Sit or stand, whichever is more comfortable for you, so that the soles of your feet are on the ground. And I would like you to begin to reach down with your awareness through the soles of your feet into the deep earth beneath you, and start drawing up through the soles of your feet the deep energy of earth. And let that energy begin to rise up through the soles of your feet. Let the earth energy work and stir in you and rise up through your legs. Let the earth energy rise through the lower centers of your body. Let the earth energy rise and stir and work within you, rising to your solar plexus. Let it rise to your heart center, to your throat, to your forehead, to the crown of your head, and rise above the crown of your head and stream down around you as a gentle mist, returning to its source. And let the earth energy begin to rise up through the soles of your feet again. Feel the earth energy rising up your legs, up through the lower centers of your body, up to your solar plexus. Feel the earth energy rise to your heart, to your throat, to your forehead, all the way up to the crown of your head. And let the deep energy of earth rise above the crown of your head and flow down around you as a gentle rain returning to its source. And let the earth energy begin to rise in you again, rising up through the soles of your feet, up through all of your body, up to your head, rising above the crown of your head, flowing down around you, and beginning its cycle through your body again. So that as you feel this cycle working within you, renewing itself, replenishing itself, returning to its source, you are stronger with each breath. You feel your power growing. You are stronger. You are more connected with the earth. You feel yourself joined in this endless cycle of renewing and returning. Enjoy this moment and notice again where the center of your body and your being seems to be in this moment. Perhaps it's in your solar plexus. Perhaps in your heart center. Perhaps it's in another of your centers. Find where you seem strongest at this moment. Place your hand on that center of your body and feel it growing even stronger as the earth energy moves in you and cycles around you. And now you are ready to open yourself at the crown of your head to the light energy that is flowing towards you from beyond you, from beyond all of us, from the universe itself. I would like you to begin to shift your awareness upwards to the crown of your head and reach above you to see and feel an immense source of light energy that is streaming towards you from above. You may see this immense, inexhaustible light energy as a cone of light pointing down towards the crown of your head, or as a great sphere of light. It is limitless. It is available to you. So make it your intention to open yourself at the crown of your head to this inexhaustible light energy of all that is, and let the light flow down to the crown of your head shining. Let it stream to your forehead shining. Let the light roll down to your throat center shining. Let the light wash down to your heart center shining. Let the light stream down to your solar plexus shining. See the light roll down through the lower centers of your body shining. Let the light wash all the way down through your legs, through your whole being. Let the light move down to the soles of your feet and come out beneath you and cycle up your back. Let the light stream up your back, up the back of your head, and enter you again at the crown of your head. And you see and feel the light moving through you, moving to your forehead shining, moving down to your throat center shining, moving to your heart center shining, streaming to your solar plexus shining, washing down through the lower centers of your body shining, washing, rolling down through your legs shining, and cycling up your back and rolling up the back of your head and entering you again. Let the light move through you and around you, and notice again where your center seems to be, and see the light growing ever stronger and brighter at the center of your body and your being in this moment. See the light growing at your heart or your solar plexus, wherever your center seems to be, growing and shining brighter and brighter in your being as an inner sun. Let the light move from your inner sun like rays of the sun through every fiber and particle of your being, washing you free of all pain and weakness. Let the light roll through every fiber and particle of your body and being. See the light stream to the surface of your skin and shine beyond it and around you, surrounding you as a radiant aura. So that in this moment where there is only now, you are within the light, you are surrounded by the light, you are in a place where you are loved and protected. The simple pair of visualizations, calling up the deep energy of Earth and renewing your connection with the cycles of Earth, calling in the light energy of all that is, and filling yourself and surrounding yourself with light. These are visualizations you can renew and return to whenever you feel the need. They will help you to clear a space in yourself and raise your energy to deal with the manifestations of insight and power that are likely to come to you with contact with the greater reality. Now let us begin to examine the first steps you might take in becoming an active dreamer. The first steps you might take in learning to catch, record, and work with your dreams. We're going to start by looking at how you might learn better to catch and work with your spontaneous night dreams, and also at what might be a source of blockage or resistance that has been preventing you from having adequate or frequent dream recall. I want to focus for now on one principal source of resistance that many of us have known in life to catching and working with our spontaneous night dreams. This is the fear of nightmares or scary dreams. As a matter of fact, people who are infrequent dream recallers, people who rarely remember or rarely admit to remembering dreams, often claim, when they talk about it, that the reason for their resistance is that the dreams they remember are fearful, they're nightmares, they're horrible, they don't want to deal with them. And this is quite understandable, because if you are avoiding contact with your dreams and the source of your dreams in general, in all likelihood, the dreams you'll remember will be violent, dramatic, things that shock you awake. And through the procedure of shock, shock being a great teacher, force you to remember something that you might otherwise avoid. It's a bit like this. The dream source is trying to give you helpful advice on your life and will come to you and speak in gentle ways, but if you persist in not listening, the dream source, being your friend and advisor and determined to get through to you, will pursue you with increasingly scary and dramatic dreams couched in more and more vivid and threatening language until you are compelled to remember something. So it's rather important to face the images of fear that we encounter in nightmares and find a way to deal with them. The best advice I ever heard on how to deal with nightmares came from a child I know very well because she is my youngest daughter. When she was 4 years old, my youngest daughter, Sophie, came into my bedroom at 2 o'clock in the morning, and she tugged at my sleeve quite deliberately and persistently and said in a strong but calm voice, "Dad, wake up. I've had a scary dream." I sat up, I looked at her. I said, "Tell me." She said, "Well, there are two hairy monsters chasing me." And she was calm. I noticed her calm. It was very interesting. "So what did you do?" I asked her. And my four-year-old daughter says to me, "Oh, I put on a dragon costume and I chased them back." How many adults need to hear wisdom like that from children? Our children, as a matter of fact, are natural dreamers, and they dream quite naturally in the way of shamans, who know that dreams are real experiences, and know also that the challenges we face in dreams should be faced on their own ground and not fled from. Children know better than the adults who say to them when they wake from nightmares that might be unresolved, "Oh, go back to sleep, it's only a dream," consigning their children back to the place of their fears where adults so often fear to go themselves. It's really been terrible in our culture. We need to change our habits. It's like this with nightmares, and perhaps you have been fearful of nightmares. You need to learn the discipline, the technique of going back inside a fearful dream and confronting the challenge on its own ground and asking that monster, that nameless dread, that object or image of your fears, "Why are you after me? Why are you on my case? Why are you pursuing me? What are you telling me?" It is remarkable how often, when you find the courage and the ability to confront a nightmare terror in this way on its own ground, you will discover that the nightmare adversary is actually an ally in return, pursuing you with a message because it wants you to listen and learn how better to deal with some challenge that faces you in the whole of your life. In a later session, we are going to learn techniques of going back inside the dreamscape by which you can go back and confront the object of your fears. Perhaps that very concept at this moment makes you uneasy or fearful. Perhaps you'd like to begin with a simpler method that doesn't involve going right back inside the fearful dream. If that is your case, you might try this one for dealing with nightmare fears. You might simply take up a pen and paper, and at a moment when you are in a safe and private space and reasonably relaxed, perhaps by doing an energy-raising visualization like the one I've offered, you might attempt to dialogue with the image of your fears. Take the image of that brute who blocks your path, that monster that is pursuing you, that nameless terror, and ask it, "Who are you? What are you telling me?" And see what comes to you. It is extraordinary how much will come to you if you initiate this dialogue. If you want a friend to be present, to watch over you, to attend you, to partner you, as you initiate this dialogue, that is fine. It is a teaching of shamanic traditions that shamanic dreamers are made, as they learn to confront and master the images of terror in dreams. For example, in Southeast Asia, the shaman's most powerful animal ally is usually the tiger. A tiger, when you first come across it in dreams, might be quite a fearful sight, particularly if your first glimpse of it is of the open jaws and the unvelveted claws. Clearly, if you were to command such an ally, to have it at your disposal, to have it respect you and work with you as a friend, you're going to have to master your fears in order to work with it. So the teaching of the shamans of Southeast Asia example, the Sonoy of Malaysia, is that it is by confronting the fearful adversary in dreams that will become nightmares if unfinished. We acquire allies as well as picking up messengers. As a matter of fact, what is a nightmare but an unfinished dream, an aborted dream? You may have a fearful dream in which, to continue the tiger image, you encounter and are dismembered by a Bengal tiger, red in tooth and claw, but you wake up feeling fine, knowing you've been somehow put back together and you've survived okay. That is not a nightmare. That's a challenging dream. It might have been scary along the way. It might finally have been empowering. One of the most empowering dreams in the life of a woman who was threatened by terrible illnesses was a dream in which she saw a field of body parts, her own body having been mangled and mutilated and dismembered. This dream followed significant surgery. And in the dream, she was able to pick up new body parts and was helped to put them together, making a new body. That is a dream that was scary in detail along the way, but finally thrilling and empowering. So the definition of a nightmare is not scary dream. The definition of a nightmare is unfinished or aborted dream. Unfinished or aborted dream in which you confronted fears that were so terrible to you, you couldn't go on with it. You ran away from it. We need to learn to brave up and go back into such unfinished dreams and dream them onwards. Often we can find resolution not only of the unfinished dream itself, but of the deep issues in our lives that it might reflect. Now, having offered these initial suggestions about learning to deal with nightmare terrors and put that out of the way, let us consider how you might develop the practice of catching your dreams on a regular basis and enjoying the tremendous adventure that that may hold for you in your life. Remember to play. That's what it's all about. This is a game. This is fun. This is not another chore to add to the list of schedules and plans and boring duties you may have to contend with in your life. Don't treat this as another chore. Undertake it when you're ready to play, and undertake it in the spirit of play. That is the first general counsel I would give you. If you're willing to approach this game of catching and working with dreams and following your dream adventures on a regular basis, what do you need to do? Well, first of all, you need to state your intention. And I mean by that, if you're not a frequent dream recorder at the moment, write down on a piece of paper, I want to catch my dreams. I'm open to the wisdom of my dream source. I'm ready to play with dreams. Write down something like that and put it under your pillow and literally sleep with it. If, on the other hand, you're already an active dreamer, you will want a phrase, something that relates to a question or request that is on your mind. I would like to rehearse for the job interview. I would like to know what happens when I die. I wish to be healed. Even if you are an infrequent dream recaller, you might choose a specific question or request of that kind in order to mobilize your own interest in the game of catching dreams. Secondly, as a basic technique for improving your dream recall, if you're going to catch dreams, you have to have the time and the space available to do it. That means you should have time in the morning when you wake up to linger in bed and not be rushed off into the outer world, into the bustle and scheduling of outer life. You must have a little time in the morning when you wake up to loll around and see what comes back. If you must be roused by an alarm clock, please use soft music or a buzzer and not news radio with its commercials and its noise and the bustle of outer life. You need space. I suppose this is actually a third step towards catching dreams. You need a private space. You need a space when you wake up where your partner's not going to kick you awake or roust you out, or someone is going to rush into your room ripping you out of the dream state. These are the initial steps. You need to write something down as soon as you wake up. If you don't catch your dreams straight away, they're likely to flit away. Dreams are evanescent. They're fleeting. They're gone within minutes if you don't catch them. It's a funny thing. There's a great big door between dreaming and waking. It's thicker than the average door of a bank vault. It's enormous. You can hear the vacuum seal locking when it swings shut after you wake up. And what you have from the other side of that door is something you need to get down, write down, begin to work with immediately. So that implies that if you're going to play the game of dream catching, you will have your tools ready. This is not a big investment. This means a pad of paper and a pen or pencil on your bedside table. If you're capable of talking to a tape recorder when you first wake up, go for it. I actually can't work my vocal cords, or at least don't want to when I first wake up. I don't want to croak into a tape recorder at that time of day. So I use a pen and paper. There's a privacy issue here. You want to write things down in a way where you're not going to be interrupted and perhaps where you're not going to disrupt your partner. You might, if you're sleeping with a partner, use one of those pen lights to do this discreetly. You might sneak off into the bathroom when you wake up. A lot of good dream work is done in the bathroom. What else do you need to know to start playing this game? Well, I think you need to learn to relax in terms of what is coming to you in the course of the night. If you wake up and you don't immediately have any dreams, don't panic or kick yourself for being such an inadequate dreamer. Don't give up straight away. Spend that extra period of time lingering in bed, sometimes by shifting around between the sheets, rolling back, wiggling back into the posture you were in when you were dreaming during the night. You somehow manage to coax a dream back to you that came to you when you were lying in a certain position in the bed. As the dream starts coming back to you, don't edit. Don't edit. Don't censor yourself. Don't pass judgment. Don't fail to write something down because it's a sexy, erotic dream and you think it's sort of scandalous. You're going to write this in your own dream journal for your own eyes. And anyway, although we have fantastic erotic adventures in our dreams, sex in dreams is quite often a metaphor for other kinds of loving or close relationships. So don't judge, edit, criticize yourself. Don't dismiss a dream memory because it seems way out weird, or on the other hand, trivial and mundane. Supposedly trivial and mundane dreams in which you see yourself in the office, going through the coffee breaks, dealing with the boss's bad temper, or whatever, are often dreams that contain a high proportion of precognitive material. In other words, they show us many elements of situations that lie just around the corner in waking life. And by catching that kind of relatively trivial, mundane dream, we can actually learn to rehearse well for situations that lie just ahead in our future in external reality. So put it down, whatever it is, large or small, erotic or sober, way out weird or trivial and mundane. Put it down without judging, without editing. And once again, if all of this seems irrelevant to you because when you wake up and you've lolled around and done all the other things, you still don't have a dream clearly formed in your mind or anything at all that you could classify as a dream, relax. Don't judge yourself. Write something down. If you have no dreams, despite your best efforts, maybe you need to take this up when you're at a different moment in your life. Over a weekend, when you can sleep and wake at hours of your own choosing. Over a vacation, when you can break your regular habits. Perhaps at a time in the future when you can get off the regular schedules. But this is quite important. If you have not been catching your dreams of late, and you want to do it now, and you find that after the first night or two or three or four, you still don't have dreams to write down, write something down anyway. What do you write down? I mean to say, write down the first thought, feeling, bodily sensation that comes to you as you are lying in the bed. We all have dream hangovers, even if we don't remember the dreams that caused them. And by writing something down, however impressionistic or sketchy, you are saying to the source of your dreams, also the source of creativity, intuition, and perhaps your deepest personal truth, I am here, I am ready to play, talk to me. You are laying down a welcome mat to the source of your dreams. These are the initial steps by which you can become a very active catcher and hunter of dreams. Now let us suppose that you're getting pretty good at catching dreams and scribbling them down on your bedside pad, and that you're ready to play the game of keeping a dream journal. This is a very important and a very smart move in your life. I've been working with my personal dream journals for more than 30 years, and I must confess to you that I am still learning all the time about the tremendous treasures that your personal dream journal will prove to hold for you. Let me give you a few examples. By recording dreams in a journal, you are opening a direct channel to your creative source. You will find your gifts as a writer and storyteller automatically increase as you write in your journal without fear of consequences, without fear of editing or judgment. Songs, stories, plays, dramas, scientific breakthroughs, great hostesses' menus, plumbers' solutions to problems, all these flow from dreams written down in this way. So you are opening a direct channel to your creative source, which will thank you by speaking to you more clearly and helping you to get into a state of creative flow in your waking time. Now the great thing you'll learn is that as you keep a dream journal, you will be able to note the correspondences between your dreams and subsequent events in waking life. As we will see in a later session, dream precognition, spotting the future in your dreams, is a quite natural and even routine phenomenon, although rarely recognized and honored in our Western society. As you keep a dream journal, you will be able to log the connection between your dreams and waking events that correspond to those dreams. And as you do that, you will hone your ability to use your innate, God-given, natural dream radar to scan your external environments and get advanced information about matters large and small that lie in your future. When you can see the future, you will discover you are also able, quite often, to change it. But in order to do that, in order to play this game, you need to start logging your dreams and testing yourself by noting the correspondences between those dreams and subsequent events. Another thing you will discover as you log your dreams in a journal is that you are developing a personal treasure house of symbols and images. What does a train mean to you in your dream? What does footwear, what does a pair of leather wrappings with soles, leather or canvas wrappings with soles, mean to you in your dreams? What does ice cream mean to you in your dreams? You will notice the evolution of these personal symbols, and you'll rapidly discover that there's no need to go running off for the kind of drugstore dictionary of dream imagery that is often on sale. You'll have your personal lexicon of symbols and images. You'll find what the snake means to you, and you'll see how the snake images evolve from one dream to another. You'll be rushing off to libraries to follow up research leads. You'll be discovering about ancient gods and the latest scientific theories, all because you are seeking to explore the leads, the tips, the excitement of the images that come to you spontaneously in your dream. There is no dictionary of symbols that you will ever find that will be as rich to you as a dream journal that you have worked with over a period of years. And let me say here that there is no book on dreams, including my books, that will ever be as important or as valuable to you as your own dream journal once you have learnt to keep it and prize it. All right, you're ready to write up your dreams in your journal. How do you proceed? Begin by writing down a few key words and write it up into a finished report. When you've written up your finished report, look upon it as a story and give it a title, as you would give a story a title. This is not about winning a literary award. Don't agonize over it. Give the entry in your dream journal a title, the first one that jumps out of your head. Giving your dreams titles will help you to keep track of the large volume of dream material you might have to work with later on. You'll find by treating your dream reports as stories and giving them a title that you'll be accomplishing a couple of very worthwhile things. First of all, you can put those titles into a running index of your dreams, which will help you to go back and find material when you need to look it up quickly. Secondly, you are developing your native art as a storyteller. You're learning to shape things, simplify them. Let's talk about talking about dreams. One of the things that you can and should do with your dreams is to share them with someone else. This is a great game. It builds connection, builds relationship, helps you to see each other in deeper ways. It's great fun. It's important to do for a number of reasons, one of which is that we are often very obtuse about the meaning of our own dreams. In the next session, we are going to move into how you can start working towards a deeper understanding of your dreams. But let's make it clear here that there are always going to be limitations to our understanding of our own material. We're too close to it, very close to our own issues. For that reason, another person who will listen to us, attend to us, attend to our dreams, can often offer tremendous insights. But we need to learn to talk about dreams in the right way. Don't bother with anyone who presumes or purports to tell you what your dreams mean. That is a no-no. There's no expert on dreams. No one, ultimately, can tell you the meaning of your dreams or confirm it, except you yourself as the dreamer. What others can do is to offer insights, come at things from a tangent, give you a fresh perspective, a new angle you hadn't thought of for yourself, and help you to achieve that clarity of understanding that might have been missing beforehand. So, how do you talk about dreams with another person? One thing you do is, before you say anything about another person's dreams, you preface it with a phrase like, "If it were my dream, if it were my dream." So, if you tell me that in your dream you danced with a giant watermelon on Alpha Centauri, if I'm going to comment on that, I have to begin by saying, "If it were my dream, it might mean such and such." Otherwise, I am presuming to lean into you, to lean on you, take your power away. I can only offer you my associations, my sense of what your dream would mean to me if it were my dream. You're fortunate if you have one generous, spirited, open-hearted friend in life with whom you can share dreams with confidence and mutual honesty. That's great. Two is a very good size for dream group. Larger groups are interesting because you'll get multiple perspectives. And chances are, if there are two of you sharing dreams on a multiple basis, you might start buying into each other's attitude towards these things. So you're not getting the benefit of those multiple perspectives. One of my favorite dream partners, a woman with whom I've shared dreams for more than 10 years on a pretty frequent basis, so she'll fax me dreams before breakfast sometimes when it's too early to telephone, shares my interest in, let us say, psychic dreams, dreams in which we are able to scan accurately the external environment or see into the future. So our initial gravitation in sharing a dream with each other is to jump onto the possibility that this is a warning about a situation around the corner. We might be right, but someone who takes a more generally symbolical or archetypal or even a Freudian perspective on dreams might have something to contribute that we might be missing if we were sharing dreams only with each other. And let me say about that that there is validity in all approaches to dreams. In these sessions, you are getting the old-fashioned approach to dreams, the Paleolithic psychologist's approach to dreams, the shamanic way of looking at dreams, which assumes that dreams are real experiences, that it is natural for us to dream the future and that we can do so with regularity, that it is natural for us to have transpersonal encounters with spiritual agencies and ancestors and teachers. But there are Freudian dreams, particularly if you've been shrunk to death by a Freudian shrink. You're likely to have many dreams of which Sigmund would have approved, which are susceptible to Freudian interpretation. There are Jungian dreams. There are Gestalt dreams. There are not only different ways of looking at dreams, but different ways of dreaming. And because of this wonderful, thrilling multiplicity of the styles of dreaming as well as the styles of dream working, it is helpful to share dreams with people whose point of view is different from your own. You're getting the value of a fresh look. In indigenous societies, one of the reasons for sharing dreams, not only with one favorite partner or within the family, but sometimes within the whole community, with the elders, the grandmothers, is that dreams are understood to have relevance for people beyond the dreamer herself. Dreams might involve the well-being or even the survival of a large number of people. So in a traditional Iroquois Indian village, for example, an important dream might command the attention of the entire village, not only to figure out its meaning, but to decide what processes of enactment or avoidance should be followed in order to fulfill the message of a fortunate dream or avert the consequences of an evil dream. This phenomenon of dreaming for the benefit of other people is an interesting one, and I'd like to share a personal story about it. One morning before 7 o'clock in the morning, my phone rang, and I wasn't really thrilled about this, because how many positive messages do you get on the telephone before breakfast? Not very many. So I picked up the phone. And a woman who I know to be an active and clear dreamer, a woman who gets many clear impressions in her dream, is there shaking with fear, excitement, both mixed up together. She needs to share a dream with me, and she needs my guidance on the dream. In her dream, she tells me, she has seen a former boyfriend, a man she hasn't actually been with for more than 10 years and lives in another part of the country. In her dream, her ex is in a deserted parking lot. She sees him and a woman she cannot identify attacked by muggers in this deserted parking lot and stabbed. She sees them fall to the ground. They're bleeding. She thinks they've been killed. She recounts this dream to me with a tremor in her voice. She is divided about its meaning. She's divided in her feelings. In part of herself, she is ready to go off on a psychological guilt trip and condemn herself for wanting the SOB dead because he's not with me anymore, he's with some other woman. In another part of herself, the part that knows how to dream true, she is deeply disturbed because the dream has a literal quality to it, and she feels that these events could be literally played out or might even have been literally played out. Unless something unknown could be done about them. Well, I talk with her about the dream on the phone, and we begin to practice a technique we will be returning to in depth in these sessions, because it's at the heart of my practice, and indeed I believe the traditional shaman's way of working with dreams. We proceed to do a dream re-entry. I ask her to go back inside the dreamscape, to try to do two things. First of all, to try to get a better and more complete description of what is going on inside the dream. And secondly, to see if she can change the dream in a positive way that seems natural to her. So I'm talking to her on the phone, and she is entering a relaxed state, as relaxed as she could be under the circumstances. And she is endeavoring to go back inside her dreamscape with these two purposes: to get more detail from the dream, to clarify its message inside the dream itself, and also to see if she can resolve this unhappy business inside the dream in a way that seems authentic. And now she is describing details from the dream she had not mentioned before. She can see the grand public building, its columns. She can describe the position of the cars parked in the deserted lot. She can describe the burnt-out tenement down the street, the vacant lot. She can describe the muggers with such fantastic precision that a police identikit artist would have had no difficulty, I believe, in composing their portraits. She can describe the clothes they're wearing. She has all this detail. When it comes to the other part of her assignment, it does not prosper. She tries to give the dream a happy ending. She tries to bring in the cops, have her ex leave the building sooner or later, have the muggers trip up. Doesn't feel right. It feels cute and artificial and scripted. She sees her ex and the woman with him, stabbed and apparently killed all over again, and feels the creeping horror that that brings to her. Well, what do you do with a dream experience like this? We begin to explore that, because dreams require action. I ask her about her relationship with her ex. She says, well, I have his phone number. He's a left brain type, a trial attorney. He has an efficient secretary. She sent me his new number. I know how to call him. Well, what's your relationship? Well, he thinks I'm a nut. Thinks I'm a nut. I suppose that gives us something to work with. I float the idea that she might conceivably, call her ex and tell him the dream over the phone without commentary, the way we share dreams on a casual basis all the time, prefacing it with one of those throwaway lines like, I had a weird dream about you or something. I'm not insisting strongly that she should do this. There might be other ways of working with the information, but I float it. And she says, well, I guess I could do that. As a matter of fact, I think I should do that, though he's probably going to think I want him dead because he's with the other woman. Difficult quandary, isn't it? She's a brave woman. She calls the attorney. He's living 1,000 miles away. Hasn't seen him for 10 years. Gets him on the line. I had this dream about you. She recounts the dream. Down to the stabbing and the apparent death in the deserted parking lot. And there is silence on the other end of the phone, and she is thinking, oh no, he thinks I want him dead because we're not together. He's with the other woman, who is his wife. She's now established. The attorney comes back on the line, and he says quietly, thank you very much. I know that location. It's a legislative building down here in Memphis. Unknown to the dreamer, he had been doing work for a legislative committee in that building for several months. Unknown to the dreamer, he had been meeting his wife in that parking lot where he parked his car in the position she described. Been meeting her on Friday nights at 7 p.m. prior to going to dinner. He knew in his ordinary mind that this part of town was quite dangerous after dark, an increasingly rough neighborhood, but it had never occurred to him till he received the gift of a dream message from a former lover living 1,000 miles away that maybe he should change his habits because of her dream. He changed his habits and took to meeting his wife in a safer neighborhood at a restaurant. So we've gone a little bit beyond dream sharing to some of the many reasons for learning to share dreams with other people. Dreams can be life-supporting, they can even be life-preserving. The dream in this case was not a dream of a future that was enacted, was not a precognitive dream, the future wasn't lived out. But it was perhaps a dream of a possible future, which provided life-supporting, maybe even life-preserving information for a person other than the dreamer herself. What a gift to have access to such a range of knowledge. What a power for good in our world, to be able to share such gifts intelligently, carefully, gently, with others. In this powerful story of the dream of the Memphis Muggers, we have learned something about the 9 keys to the dream gates that we will start to turn in the next session.